Welcome to a special edition of the Serious TV Drama Podcast. I'm Scott, and with me today, the Kal-El to my Bruce, or maybe you're the Bats to my Suits, I don't know. It's my even more special guest, Pat.
Hi, Scott. Hi.
We didn't rehearse when you should speak. Hey, it's great to have you here. I got a feeling a good number of our listeners might know who you all are already, but at the very least, I would call you a regular contributor to the Geek Girl Suit podcast.
Right. Yes.
I think you're what I would call the poor man Stephen Colbert to everything George R.R. Martin, kind of the way Colbert is about J.R.R. Tolkien.
Wow, that's such high praise, Scott. Yeah. I owe you money now. That's great.
All right. Now, I'll take that. Well, okay, but now, remember, I said poor man.
Yep.
I don't think anyone else could be that obsessively knowledgeable about any topic the way Colbert is about Tolkien. I mean, he won a quiz against Peter Jackson.
He's so good. So fantastic.
It's amazing. But I've been wanting to get you on our podcast for some time, but it just, had to find the right time. And since you do the Game of Thrones stuff with, Susan and the gang over there, I didn't want to encroach upon that territory. I do think it's hysterical that we're recording this on a Sunday morning / afternoon, the day Game of Thrones premieres.
That's right.
And I've been able to get you here, but we're not here to talk about Game of Thrones. I love that. Perfect. It's like getting a baseball player on. We're going to talk about golf.
Yeah, right.
No, the reason why you're here is because I know from a podcast that we were both on a podcast. I must have been Geek Girl Soup, of course. I know that you are a bit of a comic book enthusiast from way back. I think you actually are my generation of comic book reading. I think that would be fair to say.
You're making me older than I am, but I'll accept that you and I are the same generation. I agree with you.
Wait, I don't think we're that much different in age. Although I'll certainly take that.
Right.
Now, if I recall, you're something more of a Marvel guy, because we always have to segregate ourselves into camps, no matter how old we are.
No, I'm a DC guy, but I'm not as much of a DC guy as you are, and so it's kind of like you think I'm Marvel, but I tend to skew DC more, but I get what you're talking about.
Interesting. Okay, well, that makes this even more relevant then. Whatever we are, I think that means we're both pretty big fans of, I guess, the twin towering heroes of DC Comics, Batman and Superman.
Yes.
So the reason why we're here, which people who've already clicked on this podcast know because they saw the title, is I finally decided to talk about Batman v Superman: Dawn of Justice. I mean, I've been oddly silent about it on our podcast for the last month or so. And I haven't even said that very much about it online either. But it seemed weird to not say anything about it. And then I guess a week or two ago, I noticed you comment about it online somewhere, just in passing. And I realized, okay, me and Pat might be in a similar camp here.
Right. Because I agree with I know what you're going to bring up. All of the kind of the reviews or comments about the movie fell into two camps, like two extreme opposed camps.
Yeah,
there was the hardcore fanboys who were like overly in love with the movie and were aggressively so, and then the critics, not all critics, but so many critics who just would describe the movie as like a big bag of dicks or something. It's like the worst movie ever. And obviously neither camp has any idea what they're talking about. It's not a great movie. It's not a horrible movie. It's a movie that is probably worthwhile seeing, but is it the movie that we really wanted? No, I don't think so. And we can talk about that. Yeah. We can be reasonable about that.
All right. I would say at least in my lifetime, the movie itself is probably one of the most puzzling and polarizing that I've ever seen. And I genuinely find myself switching sides, so to speak, depending who I talk to.
Sure.
Like if I'm speaking to, and it may be due to the extreme thing, but sometimes I might be speaking to someone who's totally level-headed, and I still find myself skewing one way or the other, depending how they're speaking. So if they're right. like a good friend of mine who's actually a listener, believe, which means we have more than two or three, and he is a Marvel guy, but he really loved the movie. But every time I talk to him, all I do is dump on the movie. And then yeah. I've also spoken to someone else who's really kind of iffy about it. And then I keep defending parts of it. So I find myself, I'm you know, the opposite of bandwagon jumping. I'm just, or being contrarian. It's just, it's a strange film. And what you said is right. Is this the film that we wanted? Especially those of us who might have had a bit more emotionally invested because we've been waiting for something like this.
Forever, for
all of yeah. our lives. Yeah. And it is disturbing when you see some of the reactions to the film on either extreme. I mean, quite frankly, there's a segment of fandom that well before this movie came out that gives all fans a bad name. And they're kind of scary. Where yeah. I remember there was a few weeks before the film came out, one of the main film critics from HitFix.com had gotten a lot of inside word about the film, about what the reaction to was it internally, what the executives were saying, so on and so forth. And then, you know, hundreds, maybe even thousands of comments on their page and on the social media went beyond mean. You know, they were like ripping this guy for everything, right. his appearance, his, you know, almost to the point of being threatening, as well as other critics the same way. Turns out the guy pretty much looks like he was 100% correct, you know? And he's also an established guy, too. So, you know, it was kind of ridiculous. And it makes me uneasy that there are people like that. You know, I don't want to associate with people like that as a result, you know?
Yeah, sure, because you feel like, you know, here's some movie that you want to like. You like the characters. You like what's going on. And there are people who are like you in a sense. They want to see the movie. They want to like it. And then they're also fucking insane. And you're like, dude, I'd rather you hate the movie. And then I would feel good about what's going on.
Right.
You know, like, I don't want to be associated with you, man. And so I totally get that. I totally agree.
Yeah. I honestly lump those people in. I consider them no better than the people who are obviously, you know, either a sexist or racist and would come out about ridiculous things like, you know, like all the stuff with Force Awakens, and they were all reacting to, oh, John, but you can't have a black stormtrooper. Oh, you can't have the movie focus on a woman. It's like, oh, you know, you shouldn't be right. allowed to see movies because you're a moron.
Right, right.
And this one, another weird thing about this film for me, just in generally speaking, it makes me walk the razor's edge of being a hypocrite. because whether it be on this podcast or in other places, I have what I call the oft-spoken stance on whether it be films or TV shows that are based on, you know, primarily on comic book properties, but, you know, it can apply to other source material as well, that they don't necessarily have to be beholden to it. You know, I don't try to use that as my comparison necessarily, but that gets really, really tough with this movie to the point where I almost have to break my own rule because I don't see any way around it. I mean, that's going to become really clear as we talk about, especially a couple certain characters.
Yes.
In this and movie.
And particularly one character in particular. You know, and no spoilers. We'll get to that point when we do. But I know what you're talking about. And yeah. I agree with you that, you know, if I tell you a story about a character, it might be different than a story you know. And that's okay as long as the character is pretty much the same. So if there's like a book series out and someone – like Sherlock Holmes. You know, if someone provides you a Sherlock Holmes story that's similar to what you've read but it different twists, different plots going on, you don't get bent out about that. As long as Sherlock Holmes is a detective who has certain traits – that is reminiscent of Sherlock Holmes. Otherwise, you would say this should be called something else. And I think that's what kind of fits in with this these movies.
Yeah. Yeah, especially with two of the four I think we're going to talk about in the opening of the opening segment here.
Sure.
One last thing I'm going to say about the overall film is that I actually – and I've seen it twice, by the way, so that I don't know if that helps or hurts me here, but who cares? And I think I had this happen after I saw it the first time, that I had a relatively minor epiphany after seeing it. and it's this. And it kind of goes side by side with what I just said about being a hypocrite, maybe. If you have to preface your opinion of a film, or a TV show for that matter, with any sort of an excuse or qualifier, and I'm not talking about your health, like, oh, I had 105 fever, I had the flu. No. I'm talking about the film itself. If you have to set up your opinion that way, I think you're already pointing out a fundamental flaw in that film or that TV show. And I think that's something, it's an excuse we try to make, but it's kind of bullshit sometimes. I think the most popular one, you've heard this a million times, you might have even used it yourself, I know I have over the years, mm-hmm. This is more about setup. This is more about setting things up.
Right, yeah.
Now, here's the thing. You can have a movie that does that, but you shouldn't be aware that that's what the movie was all about. The movie should be able to function on its own and tell a fully realized story. A movie can end on a cliffhanger. That doesn't matter. You still can tell a full story with a cliffhanger. That's fine. But if the movie is more about introducing elements and introducing characters and nothing else, then it's nothing but Act One. It's not, you know, it's not really a film on its own. And another one is what we were just talking about. It's the, well, if you read the book or if you read the comic books, then no, because that shouldn't be necessary. You shouldn't, you know, it's just like if you were about to read a book, would you need to have read a book before you read that book?
Right. And, you know, and we can always make exceptions, you know, like if you see the Two Towers without seeing Fellowship of the Ring, it's okay that you don't know what's going on, and it's okay that the movie doesn't necessarily solve like the big problem that's going on because you know it's part of the series.
Right.
But The Two Towers as a movie itself has to tell somewhat of a story that makes sense, and it does with the whole, you know, stuff at Helm's Deep. If that movie was just a bunch of disconnected things that kind of tied off some plots from the first movie and just kind of like set up plots for the third movie that had no kind of stakes or payoff until you saw the third movie, The Two Towers would have also failed as that bridge piece as well. You know, you can kind of judge a movie and get that it needs something else to come along, but the best movies, like you said, you can enjoy from the beginning to end. You don't need like a lot of lead-in for it. You want to have seeds planted for the next stuff because we know this is part of a big franchise.
Right.
But if the seeds that are being planted are more, you know, more obvious or more noticeable than the actual kind of thin plot of the movie, then that's a problem.
Right.
And am I saying that's what happened in this movie? We'll just have to get to that part when we talk about it. But it's something we can think about.
Right. I mean, the best examples usually tend to be the Lord of the Rings trilogy or even the original Star Wars film.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, Empire Strikes Back, a lot of people pick that as like the – a lot of, not you, but and we're not going to get into that, but because I'll just blow my head off.
But I respect what you're saying. Empire is a great movie. It probably is, as you say, the best of those movies. I rate it differently from an emotional point, but forget I said that. But Empire, you can watch from the beginning to the end, not see any of the other movies. Maybe have a friend tell you who everyone is. That's a solid movie, even with it ending in a cliffhanger. You're like, that's an awesome movie.
Exactly. All right. I feel that, you know, speaking of preface, I've probably forced us to preface our talking about this movie enough.
All right.
So I think what I'd like to do, so I think we've talked about it in very vague overall terms, and people probably already have a sense of how we feel about this film. I thought the best way to attack it. Ooh, see, I'm using the phrase attack already. All right. You know what? Let's start with something that might be a little bit more positive, you know, depending which person we're talking about. I think a lot of when you're dealing with a DC Comics movie specifically, we're really the first thing we're going to be focusing on are, you know, you've got these hugely iconic characters, and how did they handle them? How did either be the actors or the directing or the writing, whatever? This is a movie, you know, it's the follow-up but yet not a sequel, whatever you want to call it, to Man of Steel. So we've already met Superman before, but this is the movie that introduces Batman to this universe. So I thought we'll hold the dogs at bay just for a few minutes longer. At least I suspect we will. I don't know. I only know like one opinion of yours or about one thing about the movie. I know nothing else, which is kind of excites me. I don't know what the heck you're going to say.
Okay.
So let's actually, since his name is the first in the title, let's start with Batman. How did you feel? I mean, first of all, you know, I have no idea how you even felt about the whole Batfleck controversy from a couple years ago anyway. But how did you feel the Batman aspect of this film was handled in terms of character, actor, and so on?
Yeah, I liked Ben Affleck as Bruce Wayne, and I liked him as Batman. And also, to answer maybe what you alluded to before, I had no problem when he was first announced, and I was not upset about the whole Batfleck thing. I thought, you know, he certainly looked like a playboy guy. He certainly is, you know, muscular, athletic. I thought he could probably pull that off okay. I never saw the Daredevil movie, so we can just, you know, forget that even happened. You know, but so I went in with like an open mind for him, and I mostly enjoyed him as Batman. I have some kind of complaints, more like how he fit into the role of the movie. But I would see a Batman movie with this Batman, with that Alfred.
I would say I agree. I also didn't get into the whole uproar about the casting myself. I thought people were being a little ridiculous, because I think Ben Affleck has done enough over the last several years to, if the guy needed to redeem his career or whatever from like the early part of the century between Daredevil and was it Jiggly or Giggly, however the hell that movie is pronounced?
Yeah, Geely, I think.
Geely,
yeah.
Thank you. Well, yeah. Wow, I butchered it twice. Anyway. But considering the movie, who cares?
Right.
But I didn't have a problem with that because I was like, why are people treating... I mean, and I'm a huge Batman fan. I'm wearing a Batman watch and I'm wearing Batman socks today. I'm a Batman fan. But people... It's not Hamlet. You know? This isn't going to require... It's not like they need to go out and find the next Daniel Day-Lewis to play Batman. I mean, get a good actor, get someone who can handle, you know, the both sides of it and not be, you know, a stick of wood or something. But I felt... I think he can handle it. I thought he handled it rather well. As far as his performance, I have no issues with him as either Bruce Wayne or Batman, which is nice because a lot of times when we watch... a lot of different live-action versions of Batman. It seems to be a common thing, like, oh, he makes a good Bruce Wayne, but not a good Batman, or vice versa. I seem to remember that with a lot of different characters. Like, I think people said that about Michael Keaton. Like, oh, they thought he was a good Batman, but not such a great Bruce Wayne. And right, or Christian Bale might have been the reverse, even, for some people.
Right. And the movie did one thing right with Batman that other movies have not done, in that they just treated it seriously and did not worry about the fact that a guy was dressed up as a bat beating up criminals. One of the problems with like the there's lots of problems with the Schumacher movies, but the second one with Val Kilmer, there's this big deal with Nicole Kidman going like, oh, how interesting that you dress up in rubber and latex. Like, you know what? We all understand that Batman is weird and he dresses up weirdly. We have to just pretend that that's not that weird because it has nothing to do with Batman or what he's up to.
Right.
It's this pulp idea of people dressing up in weird costumes and fighting crime. And we need to at least take that on at face value and say, I accept this and let's move on. And the movie did. I mean, the movie did not, you know, in fact, they went with a good angle that he was kind of like this mysterious urban legend thing. And that was good. Like, they hardly ever called him. They never called him Batman in the movie. He was just this mysterious, the Bat. And I'm totally behind that. I really respect that that choice.
We're gonna get into some of my issues about it in about 30 seconds. And that's
okay. No, good. Good.
Let me just say one other just easily complimentary thing about the way Batman was done in this movie, and then I think it's time to unleash a little bit. I thought, looks-wise, and this may sound superficial, but I don't think it is, especially with a character like Batman, I thought the outfit, and I don't mean the big Frank Miller Dark Knight Returns-esque gigantic iron thing. I'm talking about his regular outfit. I thought they really had that down. I thought this might have been the best-looking Batman in any film because he wasn't like all armored up. He looked like he could move really well. Even regardless of how whatever percentage of that was CGI'd, I imagine some of it was here and there. It didn't bother me. It was fairly seamless for the most part. I just liked the way Batman looked in this film, and I didn't have to. It wasn't something I had to make excuses for. Like, well, if you get used to it after a while, like maybe I did with Batman Begins, the first Christian Bale outfit, which I was kind of iffy on. It took me a while to get used to it in that film. This, I was like, wow, that's a great Batman outfit.
And I'm on board with you in that, because I don't like my Batman to be overly armored. And that's one of the things that irritated me a little bit about the Nolan movies, which I respect from a completely different, you know, setup.
Right.
But I agree with you. I thought Affleck's Batman suit, it looked good. It didn't look as armored as it could have been. It was probably more armored than I wanted, but it's okay. I'm all right with that. But I thought they had the right aesthetic. And the cow, you got to admit, the cow looked great.
Oh, I love the cow.
You know, and that, I mean, straight up, that was probably the best of the cows that I've seen in the recent Batman movies. So total points for look. I agree.
Okay. So we've been really nice about it. Now, and again, this can be about just any number of plot elements in the movie itself that are specifically Batman related, because obviously a lot of this movie is Batman-related, quite frankly. It's in many ways, it's maybe more of a Batman movie than it is a Superman movie. I will let the guest go first, since you already alluded to something, and then I will join in after you.
All right, so I guess you took issue when I said that he had that kind of like the urban legend type of feel?
Yeah, there's just certain aspects of that don't make sense.
Oh, no, there's lots of things that don't make sense, but let's you and I just like we can debate it or not, because it's not a huge emotional investment for me.
Right.
My feeling was that if you're going to have a Batman who has like a long history of being a Batman, then he has to have been established. I'm not describing myself well. If everyone knows about Batman and he like, you know, hangs out with Commissioner Gordon and his exploits are really well known, it doesn't make sense for the Superman part of the equation that it's kind of like a mystery for Superman, because growing up, he would have read about the exploits of Batman in Gotham City, right next to Metropolis. So in many ways, they kind of drop Batman into the Superman universe and we have to kind of accept it. And, you know, that we can be angry about that or not. So I just like that. Well, you know, Batman's been around. Maybe he was active. He's been quiet for years. You know, we just don't know how often he does things. And the only way that I could kind of accept that is that if he's kind of has this kind of legendary status. But we know, and I agree with you, that doesn't hold water. It just doesn't hold water.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense, because they pretty much establish he's been doing that. He's been Batman in one form or another for nearly almost like 20 years. Seems to be the impression here. So first of all, the fact that people are, for the most part, people just are referring to him as the Bat. I think the word Batman is used maybe twice in the entire movie or something along those lines.
Right.
That, number one, doesn't make any sense. Number two, getting to the whole Superman, being aware of him, the whole vigilante thing. It's like, well, hey, you know what? The whole vigilante thing doesn't work. It doesn't work because there's a bat signal.
Yes.
And who's lighting the bat signal?
Right. And it's not a question of, oh, and the police seem to be working with him. Well, no, the police are investing funds into alerting Batman. I mean, you know, it's a given. Let's just go with that.
So it makes no sense. So when you have a moment in a scene that has several aspects of it that make no sense. In fact, I'm almost going to backtrack. The car chase scene.
Oh my God. The car. I've been waiting for us to talk about the car chase scene. And let's take Superman out of it for a second. Okay.
Yes. Even though the Superman part is a big part problem there too.
Right. Well, let's just take him out for a moment. Okay. So Scott, you're Batman, you know, and that's cool. You would like to be Batman.
Oh, yeah.
And you want to hijack this shipment of kryptonite because you want to get your hands on it because you might have to deal with Superman. and you know that it's on this boat, and you know that Lex Luthor is going to transport it, and you know where it's going to be, and you probably even know where he's going to take it already. So you take the time to like hit the truck that has a tracker with a tracker so you can follow them, and then you have a big car chase to let them know that you're after them. And like, what the hell was that all about? I mean, why is Batman having this big gunfight car chase to get at kryptonite that he doesn't get, but then he just like steals it later on when he decides to actually get to it? I mean, I'm okay with a car chase, I guess. I usually don't like car chases in any movies because they don't make sense to me most of the time. But I thought, why is Batman going to all this trouble when he could have stolen it on the boat or waited for them to transport it somewhere and then stolen it? Why let them know that he's chasing after them with guns blazing?
It's ridiculous. The only reason that scene is there is to show off the Batmobile. That's the reason the scene is there, because the Batmobile, generally speaking, doesn't get used much at all for the rest of the film. So that was the way to showcase the Batmobile. But once he shoots that tracker at the van, then it's like, well, there's no need to get into a car chase. There's no point to it, because that's why you have a tracker on it.
Right.
So all that now, I don't mind. I probably don't mind a car chase as much as you if there's a point to it. Like the car chase sequences in, you know, the Nolan movies, especially the first two specifically, all make sense to me. You know, the police are after him, or he's after the Joker, or whatever. But here, made no sense.
And they at least did some inventive things, like when he hooked the one car with like the little bat anchor, and he was dragging it behind, so he could kind of launch it at them. I enjoyed that. I don't know if I would have done that myself had I been Batman, but I thought that was like, hey, I've never seen Batman throw a car at some guys before. Right. I'm into it. I mean, I was okay with it, but the whole point of the chase made no sense. I mean, the point that you say that it was really to show off the Batmobile, that was true, but the whole reason that Batman was chasing after these guys just so obviously made no sense.
Story-wise, it made no sense. It's like why have the Enterprise, you know, rise from the water in the beginning of the second J.J. Abrams Star Trek movie? I hate that, but yeah. I'll admit, it's there because it looks cool. That's really the only reason it's there. But back to this scene, back to this whole sequence. I mean, it didn't make sense story-wise. And now I'm okay. I gotta bring the guy in red and blue into it now.
Yes, now's the time, right?
Because a couple things don't make sense here. First of all, in the middle of this car chase, where Batman is obviously chasing, you know, presumably thugs, criminals, villains,
heavily armed bad guys.
He turns a corner and Superman's there, which brings everything to a crashing, screeching halt.
Yeah.
Now I'm assuming Superman's been watching this from up above. I'm assuming Superman should pretty much know that, you know, Batman is probably chasing bad guys. So why are you just letting them go on and stopping Batman? Why is he doing this? That didn't make any sense to me at all, given the circumstances.
And
then going back to what we were talking about earlier about the whole Bat vigilante, whatever, you know, Superman's the one who says, you know, the next time, you know, your signal is up, don't answer it. And I was like, but who's lighting the signal? It's the police. They're the only ones who would light the signal. So that doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense that cop shoots at him in the beginning when they do that whole, Batman, as if it was a horror movie moment kind of thing. And the whole branding thing was stupid, too.
I have no idea why Batman is branding guys. And we'll talk about eventually when he gets to Lex Luthor and he's like threatening to brand him as well and doesn't. But I mean, you know, there are some characters who will leave marks on the villains. Like the Phantom will like mark somebody with his ring. But I don't know where this whole branding people with a bat and then how that's going to get your ass kicked in prison, because you're going to wear a shirt over that brand. But also, Batman's not just branding, you know, pedophiles. He's branding like everybody, right? I mean, what's he doing? It just seems like, you know, if Batman kicks your ass, you end up with a brand. Yeah. I don't even want to think about
that. It makes no sense, because if it was only about like, you know, sexual offenders or pedophiles, hey, guess what? When you go to prison, everybody knows who you are.
Yeah.
Word gets out. No one's a convict in prison very long, and no one knows what you did. I've watched enough prison TV shows and movies to know that.
We're not talking from personal experience.
No, not yet.
Right.
And one and another thing, because it kind of is part of the, I guess, tangentially part of the car chase scene. While I did like, and I always like when they do anything that indicates Batman is doing some form of detective work, you know, because, you know, he is the Dark Knight detective. That's one of his big things, because he's supposed to be one of the smartest guys, you know, in the world.
Right.
I did find it kind of stupid that Batman, Bruce Wayne, whatever you want to call him, you know, the modern day Sherlock Holmes, it took him that long to figure out that the, what was it?
The White Portuguese
was a boat. And I was like,
I mean, if he's looking for a phrase, White Portuguese, you think he'd do a Google and like some maritime registry would pop up and it would be owned by LexCorp. And he would go like, oh, this is kind of interesting. LexCorp is connected with some bad guys, blah, blah, blah. That was just dumb.
That made no sense. Let me backtrack to early in the movie and something, just because it's such a huge part of the entire film. The motivation for Batman in this film. We're given after the opening credit sequence, which, oh, by the way, let me get that out of the way first. It doesn't bother me that we got yet another depiction of the murder of Thomas and Martha Wayne. I mean, do we need it? No. I like that they did it as an opening credit kind of a thing, although I didn't need it to be part of some sort of weird dream thing, but I'll forgive it because whatever. That didn't bother me that much. I know it bothered some people. I was like, no, it's fine. You know, they're going to do it.
my comment will be this to you. It's a good podcast when the guests and the hosts disagree about things. This is not going to be one of those times because I have no problem seeing the Waynes killed all the time. I don't even know why people get mad about it. I mean, I don't mind. It's okay. So
And they did it in an economical fashion. Now, I'll give you like a really silly, goofy criticism of it. It's nothing to do with the depiction of the murder at all. I mean, it looks great. It's got they went to see Zorro. Is it supposed to, which Zorro movie is it supposed to be? Actually, is it Zorro the Gay Blade? Because it should have been the early 80s. Anyway, which would have been hysterical. I wish they had done that. By the way, the only thing I'd probably, this is going to sound really stupid, but I don't care. Movies, big superhero blockbuster movies, usually have some major fanfare at the beginning. You know, the big logo, the big credits, the big boom, boom. And the fact that they just had, you know, the little white words, you know, on screen during this, almost like it might have always been, you know, it could have been any film, seemed a little strange to me. Again, not bad, but maybe just not what I've come to expect from pretty much this type of film. Especially from a Zack Snyder film, quite frankly.
Yeah, you'd expect him to have more of a flashy beginning.
Especially for this movie. But, you know, again, it's not really a criticism. It was more of kind of a surprise thing. So right after that, we get that. Oh, by the way, I will say that I love that white screen. And we got, you know, 18 months ago or whatever it was. Yeah. The whole the world meets the Superman.
Right.
I love the very retro feel of that. And that's where we get the explanation that while, you know, Superman was fighting Zod in Metropolis and, you know, decimating the city pretty much, Bruce Wayne is there.
Yeah.
I will put aside some of the silliness of it, that Bruce Wayne, you know, just flies in while this is happening. For what purpose? Just to run around? Because he's not there to suit up as Batman and save people. He's just running around.
I hate to interrupt, but, well, actually, I don't hate it. I just did it. But it seemed to me that Bruce Wayne had to go to Metropolis so he could use his cell phone to say, dummies, get out of the building. And they would go like, oh, the boss says we can get out of the building. Thank God he called us. I mean, like, no, they would already be evacuating. But from what you're saying, I was glad that he was there because he was our viewpoint from the ground of the destruction. And that destruction was so heavily panned by people who saw Man of Steel. And, you know, and it went on for a long time, and I get all that. But seeing it from the other point of view, to me, I enjoyed it. I mean, I don't know. I guess it provided a new element to it of the people trying to avoid the destruction and getting out and the kind of the emotional cost of what was going on. Anyway, I'm done.
No, that's fine. And I just wish they could have, I mean, and honestly, I wish they could have established him already being there, and then it wouldn't have felt as silly. But, you know, again, it didn't bother me. That's not a genuine criticism of the film. It's just like, you know, that's a very minor nitpick, and there's probably be a lot of nitpicks we're going to be having in this movie. I'm going to go more major, because it establishes here, by the look on Bruce's face and everything that happens, that he's holding Superman accountable for the death of all these people. And you know what? Perhaps rightfully so, because, you know, that was a criticism of Man of Steel. Like, you know, Superman should have tried to get him to a more, you know, desolate area where there weren't people, where you weren't putting all these thousands of people at risk, yada, yada, yada. And that's...
But we'll agree that Superman did not invite the Kryptonians to come to Earth and try to blow up the planet.
Oh, no. Yeah. I didn't have an issue with the destruction either, other than in the cinematic feel of it, it began to feel monotonous for me. It just went on too long. But I wasn't of the, you know, that's not my Superman, because he wouldn't, just like, no, first of all, the Kryptonians came down and did most of the destruction themselves with those gigantic machines. And then you had, you know, the insanity of Zod and so on and so forth. But I don't want to get sidetracked into Man of Steel, right?
Sure,
now.
We
got a big enough movie to talk about here. And plus, I think we're actually, oddly enough, we're on the similar page with Man of Steel, if I recall.
Yeah, we are.
I tend to defend it. The two big things that people have issues with that movie, I don't have an issue with. I have issues with other things. And after seeing this movie twice, I kind of want to take the shrink wrap off my as yet unwatched Blu-ray of it and see if maybe I feel differently about Man of Steel as a result of this movie.
Yeah.
But back to this, I think it's established that Bruce Wayne is blaming him, you know, that seething look, and, you know, okay, and that seeds it. Yeah. That would make sense. But then it's 18 months later. So he doesn't do anything for the next 18 months, apparently.
Uh-huh.
And then we get something which I had to pay razor-sharp attention to the second time I saw it, because I was thinking about it after I saw it the first time and realized, that doesn't make any sense. I'm going to go see it in a couple days again. I got to pay attention. Early in the movie, he's having a scene with Alfred. Oh, by the way, although some of his gags become a bit repetitive, I do like Jeremy Irons as Alfred. I think, mm-hmm. you know, he's definitely got the gravitas, etc. Early on in the film, when he's having a scene with Bruce Wayne, Alfred seems to be the one to point out Superman to him and the issues of this Kryptonian and what the power he wields and the destruction and the danger he is. Although for the rest of the film, Alfred's constantly trying to get him not to do this.
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember I asked a bunch of people, like, was I crazy? Did we see Alfred pretty much telling him, oh, you got to deal with this, and then the rest of them would be like, no, don't deal with this.
Right.
Am I the only one? That makes no sense. Did someone, it felt like someone did a draft of a script and forgot to fix something, and they forgot to rewrite something, which, you know, it's, you know, ripples in a stream kind of an effect. And I thought someone, again, dropped the ball there.
And there are just so many troubling, like, motivations for Batman to want to kill Superman, because everything that Lex was doing was not engineered to get Batman in Superman's way. It was all engineered for Bruce Wayne to have a beef with Superman. And okay, I'm okay with that, but so we all agree that Lex Luthor knows who Bruce Wayne and Clark Kent are. We have to accept that. There's no, you know, it's never brought up, you know, he definitely knows who Superman is, but everything Lex does is to irritate Bruce Wayne, to have the Wayne employee, you know, with the wheelchair and the intercepting the guy's disability checks and then sending the, the inflammatory notes to Wayne Enterprise. Unless Lex knows that Bruce Wayne is Batman, and they should goddamn let us know that he knows that, then the plot doesn't make any sense whatsoever. So it irritates me so much that Batman does not have a good motivation to want to take on Superman.
Yeah.
And that's different from, like, other, you know, comic book properties. Like, this is kind of loosely based on the Dark Knight. Well, the Batman in the Dark Knight legitimately has a reason to want to take on Superman because Superman is going to come and stop him in particular. And so he has to prepare for that. It's really thin for this movie, even though they have Superman kind of like, oh, this vigilante is like, you know, trampling on poor people's rights. By poor people, we mean pedophiles and other criminals. It's so thin. And yeah, so what you're saying about Alfred, again, makes no sense. But yeah.
Yeah. And I think a lot of issues we have with this movie are about characters and their motivations. And you touched on one, which I'm leaving till number four, because I got a feeling we might have the most issues with that character.
Yeah.
Or maybe not, because I think, although there's probably more to say about the Batman, I think right now we should switch over to the other side of the coin.
Okay.
Superman. Okay. This is where the thing I mentioned earlier about trying to separate the source material and the rich history of a character from any cinematic depiction, and you know, saying they want to do their own thing, and that's how I usually defend things, you know, and it works for certain things. Like you can defend, you know, the Heath Ledger as the Joker was like no other Joker we had seen before.
Yeah,
but it was great. And it did at least maintain a certain spirit of that character, of his insanity, of his anarchy, of his, you know, everything that we knew to be the Joker. I mean, and that's why they were able to get away with fundamental changes that, you know, comic book fans would normally have found irreprehensible. You know, like yeah. the Joker putting on his own makeup was a big deal to people. Like, wait, that doesn't make any sense. That's not the Joker I know. But then we see the movie. It's like, okay, it works. It's fine. It's awesome.
Yeah.
So then we have Superman in this film. And again, this, like I was saying earlier, it makes me want to go back and rewatch Man of Steel, and I feel like maybe I might end up reevaluating that movie.
Right.
I got to say, I think one of the biggest problems, if not the biggest problem of this film, outside of the plotting itself, is the depiction of Superman. And it's nothing against Henry...
Henry Cavill.
I think he's fine on screen. I think he looks good in the outfit. I don't think there's anything wrong with him. I like that he didn't try to do a bumbling Clark Kent, because I think that's a Chris Reeve thing. That should stay there. It worked for those movies. I don't need to see it again. But, oh my God. The more I think about it, the more it bugs me. I'm going to let you take it from here, because I got a feeling that's where a lot of your issues might lie. I could be wrong, but I'm feeling it's where this is going to go.
Yeah, you're not wrong. I mean, I liked Henry Cavill as Superman in Man of Steel, and we're not going to talk much about Man of Steel, but in that movie, he was brand new of being a Superman, and so I would cut him a lot of slack, but in general, I felt that the character was basically decent. He wanted to help people. You know, he felt to me like Superman. And I'm not saying that's totally different from this Superman, but in Batman versus Superman, I don't have a good sense that this is the same kind of character that I would read in the comics. He seems allergic to talk to authorities, which is weird to me, because it would be scary of a Superman to be flying around and not trying to relate to humanity or let them talk to him, because it seemed as if he had never – like talk to anybody ever. Like, you know, Lois was the only person he would ever talk to. And you would see these weird like posing going on. You know, whenever he would show up to save like the flooded people, he wouldn't just show up and save people. He'd show up and hang in the air for a while. Like he's judging them. Now I understand this is Snyder setting up his shot, but it made it feel like this is not a benevolent type of friendly character. You know, he's there to save you, but maybe he won't save you. Maybe he'll find you not, you know, lacking, and you know, unless you show the proper, you know, worship of him. Like when he saves the little girl in Mexico, you know, and it didn't seem like he was there to milk it, but it seemed like he was kind of there milking it. Like everybody's like, oh, you know, we're the superstitious Mexican people, and we love the flying man as our savior. It's like, what are you doing? What is this? I mean, come on. I mean, you know, I mean, Superman is like a charming and a relatable character. He's always been that way. And it's okay if you don't want to like play that up, and maybe you want to do your own thing, but it just gives everything this very scary vibe. And maybe you needed it for, when I say you, I mean whoever made the movie. Maybe they needed it to make it work for the whole Batman versus Superman. But it felt so irritating to me that I wasn't, I mean, you would think that Superman saving people would be like a joyous, yes, Superman saving people, and not a, he's kind of dickish about saving people.
Yeah. They so dropped the ball with the character. And what's frustrating about it is, if you're going to make your movie this Batman versus Superman thing, and that's what it should be versus, not V, it's not a fucking court case, idiots.
Yeah.
Anyway, then one of the first things you highlight is how different these two men are. And if Batman is the serious, grim character, and you know what? Generally speaking, that's the way Batman has been portrayed for most of his history.
Yeah.
You know, outside of, you know, from the late 50s through the early to mid 60s, but everything outside of that, Batman's not Mr. Jokey. He's not Mr. Smiley.
Right.
But you differentiate these two characters by the fact that, I'm not saying Superman is jokey, but he's pleasant. He smiles. He enjoys what he's doing.
And usually he's not terrifying. Even to the guys he's there to stop, he generally doesn't try to intimidate or terrify them. He's there just to stop them from whatever, you know, felonious things are doing. Do you mind if I talk for a moment about what really bothered me about the first part of the movie in Africa?
Yes, I know what it is, and I was waiting for you to talk about it. So
cool.
Be my guest.
Right. So, you know, so Lois is in this African village, and presumably Jimmy Olsen gets killed by these guys. Somebody told me that was Jimmy Olsen. I'm like, no, he's not. I'll forget that. So stuff's going down. Lois is being held hostage by this guy, and we know nothing about him. We have no information about this guy. Maybe he's a terrorist. Maybe he's like a freedom fighter, and the government are the bad guys. I mean, I don't know. I'm just watching a movie here. Well, he's got a gun on Lois because stuff's happening in the village. People are being shot. Superman shows up, and he appears just terrifyingly, like, boom, there he is. And it's very, you know, well, the guy's like, hey, I'll kill her if you do anything. And okay, that's a bad thing, but I get kind of like what's going on. And Superman pwns this guy. He flies into him with the force of a cannonball and smashes him through two walls. And yeah, these aren't steel walls. These are like mud walls. But it's hard for me to believe that this guy was not killed by Superman. Now, because there was such a big, crazy outcry when Superman killed Zod, and I respect people who were mad about that in the last movie. What I did not expect in this movie is that Superman slams into a human being as if he was taking on another Kryptonian. And you know that I was on Twitter arguing with some guy about this, and he was trying to tell me, oh, well, you know, Superman has all these powers, and, you know, he could have just, you know, maybe had the wall shatter behind the guy. Sure, he could have done all kinds of things, but that movie made it look like he pounded that guy through two walls at super speed. And humans are pretty frail when it comes to being slammed through walls. And I thought, why are you doing this? Why are you even showing me a scene that I have to debate somebody that Superman did or did not kill someone? And I thought, what are you doing? I mean, you could make him be super and not that. So there you go. That I just wanted to complain about that. It's like this really weird characterization of Superman exercising his powers in a terrifying way.
Yeah, I agree. I thought, again, it's the writers dropped the ball, as they do quite often in this film. They couldn't come up with another way for him to deal with that situation. Considering there's a person who can move at the speed of light, considering he's got these incredible vision powers, and there's so many ways he could have dealt with that situation. As, you know, again, it's hard to avoid, you know, mentioning any other versions of Superman comic books, cartoons, or what have you.
Yeah.
But we've seen this kind of situation handled a billion times before, and we've rarely seen it handled in a way where we have to actually wonder, wait, did he just kill that guy? Or at least seriously maim that guy?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It was troublesome. The Jimmy Olsen thing, don't get me started on the fact that we find that out after the fact if you're watching the credits, like, wait, this guy who was apparently like a CIA guy and not even a photographer, who that was stupid, made no sense. Oh, by the way, I'm gonna now let's get into all the other things that don't make sense about just this aspect of the film. Hey, you know what else this movie doesn't know anything about? Journalism.
Yeah, right.
Nothing about any of the newspaper stuff makes any sense. And again, I don't expect Batman v Superman to be, you know, part Spotlight.
Right.
You know, the movie
about
the newspaper, in case anyone doesn't know what I'm talking about. But there are very simple things that they don't get right. I mean, you know, it could be something as silly as, if he's a photographer in this day and age for a newspaper, they're not using film anymore.
Right.
Trust me,
right.
I've worked in this related business for all my life. It's all digital now. No newspaper photographers are using film that I know of. We'll let that go. If you're working on a newspaper and Clark, I presumably, has been there for the past 17, 18 months. Again, I'm not really clear how Clark Kent gets jobs. If I don't know if he actually did go to college or if he has a degree or whatever. I don't care about that. That's silliness. I understand that. What's not silly, what's like fundamental stupidity 101 of this movie, if you're working at a newspaper, then you have a specific assignment. You're working Metro, or you're working the city beat, or you're in the sports department, or you're a theater critic. And never do the twain, you know, cross over each other. Unless you're going back to an old episode of The Odd Couple, where Oscar Madison is asked if he can moonlight as the theater critic for a couple weeks or something. But other than that, especially a major metropolitan newspaper would not ask just a random reporter to cover, you know, a football team. It would never, ever happen. It would happen maybe on a high school newspaper, maybe.
Yeah.
Not on their version of, like, the Daily News or the New York Times or whatever Daily Planet's supposed to be. I was just like, oh, that makes no sense. And I know it's really trivial. But it's, like, dumb things like that. If you can't get little details right, then I don't know if I should be surprised when you don't get the big details right. And that's easy.
But you bring up a good point about the whole newspaper thing because, you know, Clark – They told him he's going to be doing the sports beat, you know, whatever. I could even accept that. He's like, no, I really want to cover the Batman. Oh, please let me cover the Batman. And meanwhile, Lois, who does a lot of investigative type stuff, they have her on this stupid subplot where she is literally trying to convince people, you know, I don't think Superman shot people in that village because the bullets are weird.
Oh God, yeah, pointless. Pointless.
Right. You know, if they want to involve Lois Lane, then you have Lois go, you know, I don't like what's going on in Gotham City. I think that everyone deserves a fair trial, you know, and let her go and try to track down Batman. And then that would involve Superman tangentially rather than having these weird kind of political things going on at the Daily Planet that we don't really care about and that don't make sense. And
They essentially go nowhere. My one sentence I said about the movie before I commented on it further over a month ago was this movie is overstuffed but half baked. They cram so many ideas into it and there's little follow through on so many of them. Back to Superman, like and going to like a comment that Bruce Wayne says about him early on when he's talking to Clark Kent. And oh, by the way, I like the scene between Bruce Wayne and Clark Kent. I like having these two meet. We won't get to the person in between them, which I thought that was stupid, but anyway. we're going to say that one for last. But he makes a comment about how your covers every time he, you know, saves a cat in a tree or whatever, writes a puff piece, whatever. Now, I'm not saying I want to see Superman save a cat in a tree because that would have been, you know, Superman the movie 1978. Don't need to do that again. But he was indicating a version of Superman that we never see in this film.
Right.
We never see that kind of Superman in this film. And it's weird how I keep using the word fundamental when I don't care. A fundamental thing about Superman is, yes, he's someone who, to a certain extent, has the powers or the abilities that one can say is godlike. I never like when people criticize DC Comics by saying, well, they're all gods. Like, no, maybe you could say that about Superman and Wonder Woman. That might be about it. I wouldn't apply that to everybody because I think they're in the same category as, you know, most of the characters at other comic book companies. But the thing with Superman is he's always proven from like the 40s to now is that, you know, he's not a god. You know, he's very much human. He's very much and he does get emotionally impacted by the things he can and can't do. That's where they drop it in this movie.
Right. There's a large amount of humanity in Clark Kent. I mean, in the movie, they talk all about him being an alien, blah, blah, blah. But we know that Superman happens to be this kid who grew up in Kansas, who is extremely, extremely decent. And even though he has all these powers, he would not use them for bad purposes. He just would not.
Superman, the criticism of Superman for a lot of people over the years is, oh, he's just, you know, this big, powerful Boy Scout. He's never a Boy Scout in this movie.
Right.
You know, and what one of the scenes that really bothered me, as far as Superman was concerned, was when the terrorist bombing happens.
Right.
And, you know, just blew the whole place down. Him just standing there with the look on his face really bothered me. I'll totally forgive that this could have happened without him being aware of it. Yeah, I'll go along with that. That's fine. He didn't scan the whole room first. You know, why would he have? Fine. I'll go along with that. But with all that's going around him, the fact that he just stands there almost impassively, it made me think, okay, you're just setting up what you think is a really cool-looking shot, Snyder, but you're kind of missing what makes Superman Superman. This should be ripping him apart. He should be trying to zoom around the entire building to find any possible survivors. Right. What is he doing? I was so angry by that.
His first response should be to become a first responder. I mean, immediately he would start saving people's lives who could be saved. I mean, it was like, I agree with you. He's just like, they're like, oh no, this horrible thing happened to me. You know what I mean? You know, he's acting as if, oh no, all this bad stuff, it's happening to me and it was because of me. No, he would save everyone that he could. And there would be people in need of being saved. And that's what he would do. And you're right. Right.
And the long and short of it is, I understand in Man of Steel, this is him. It's him becoming Superman. So he is trying to find himself in what he is. And maybe that bothered some people. But I got it. I thought it worked, whatever. That should no longer be the case in this film. He's been around for a while. And yet I still have a Superman who seems to be, you know, questioning his identity, his existence, whatever. These bigger issues, which this movie does not handle well at all in any way. And it doesn't even get to the point of being pretentious. It just is just poorly handled. And it's eye-rolling for me. And it really just upset, I don't know if maybe upset is a little strong. It annoyed me. It annoyed me because, again, there's a good movie to be made here. And it gets buried under all this other stuff, which is either needless or you're just not getting the character. And I think what it comes down to, and this is a near consensus about this, or at least a majority of people I think who've seen the movie will say, even if they liked a lot of it, they still will say, I don't think they quite get Superman. And when you're online, I don't care about what I'll forget what critics say and forget what, you know, even, you know, fans or quote unquote fanboys might say. When I see highly respected comic book writers who've worked for, and I don't know about guys who've worked for DC, not Marvel writers like Peter David, I don't care what you have to say, but or even cranky people like Kevin Maguire now who
sure has just no, become too it's cranky. All good, it's all good.
But when you see like a Jerry Conway, you know, and writers like that, people have been doing this for like 40, 50 years. Have their issues with how they're presenting Superman, and they have to posting this is what Superman is. This is, and they'll show you like a panel or a page.
Yeah, right.
And I'm like, why can't they get that? And that's where it goes to my source material. Things like I only will bring it up if I think you're not if you're doing a bad job of it. If you've made a change and it's a change for the worse. And unfortunately, it probably started in Man of Steel, but I forgave it there. But with this movie, it's all I can say is, you're just not getting Superman, and I'm worried that if you haven't gotten him by now, I don't know if I should expect him to be any better in later movies, because regardless of the ending of this movie, yeah, we know he's coming back. It's just stupid, so.
Yeah. See, I kind of feel that because people will complain that, oh, Superman's a big Boy Scout, so he's boring. My feeling is this. I don't necessarily want to see a movie with a character arc for Superman, some kind of like, you know, big literary thing. Can't I just see a Superman movie with Superman being Superman, the Superman that we all kind of agree on? And he might be boring, but the movie doesn't have to be boring. I mean, you know, you can tell an interesting story with boring, dull Superman, because Superman is really enjoyable. I mean, there's a reason that he was popular, not just because he could crush Nazis' heads and crap like that. You know, there's something that's very engaging and enjoyable about reading a Superman comic. And if you take away that joy, then you're really missing out on a great character. I mean,
yeah, there's an endless number of great Superman stories over the years, and you can draw upon any one of them, you know, as for inspiration or for source material. Of course, the ones that they choose here, I don't know if I would have chosen. But, you know, and as far as those who automatically have a knee-jerk reaction to dumping on Superman and finding him boring or not interesting, whatever, I'm just like, well, it's because you just have this thought in your mind, oh, he's a guy that's unstoppable. What's interesting about that? Although you guys don't seem to have a problem with, you know, Thor and the Hulk. But anyway.
Or even James Bond, who is no less indestructible, you know.
But Superman, I mean, I'm sorry, guys. Without Superman, you don't have any of your comic book heroes as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
I mean, the term superhero comes from Superman. That term hadn't happened before that. You know, that's what they coined the term after that. So yeah. Everyone, shut up.
Yeah.
So let's switch now.
Sure.
To something I think we both will have a different opinion on than Superman. One thing I think we ended up waiting for more than anything else in this film was Wonder Woman. We finally got the first live action Wonder Woman in a film. And, you know, first live-action Wonder Woman at all since the 1970s. So, what'd you think?
I really enjoyed Wonder Woman. And I'll tell you that the best parts of Wonder Woman was everything. I mean, they didn't overuse her. They left plenty aside for when they went to have the Wonder Woman movie, which would be good. I enjoyed her as Diana Prince interacting with Bruce Wayne, you know, stealing the little gizmo that he needed, you know, getting it back, all that stuff. But I enjoyed her showing up. I thought that she was great, no nonsense. She looked great. I thought they did a good job with the costume, all that kind of stuff. I'm happy to rewatch Batman versus Superman just to see the Wonder Woman stuff again. Yeah. So I've only seen the movie once. If I see it a second time, it will be to see the Wonder Woman micro story that they presented. And I'm totally down with that. So no matter what anybody says about the movie, it gave us a great little Wonder Woman movie, and I'm okay with it. So there you go.
Yeah, no pun intended, but I thought she was wonderful. possibly the biggest highlight of the movie is Wonder Woman's appearance. Everything from when she appears as "quote unquote" Wonder Woman with that great little theme that comes to play. The fact her first appearance is saving Batman, which is kind of cool.
Yeah,
and in a way, a fight scene that would have maybe have felt just almost boring, a boring CGI, you know, generic creature who they hadn't done much to since, you know, his first appearance in one of the Lord of the Rings movies. He looked like an orc for a good chunk of the part there. But she's great watching her in battle. She's the one character who does actually smile a couple times because she enjoys it.
Yeah.
That shot, I mean, I think Zack Snyder maybe gets too wrapped up in trying to recreate moments that seem like they're out of a comic book panel. Like some of the things you were saying earlier about Superman, like floating above, like, yeah, he's basically looking at an old Alex Ross comic and just mimicking it for the big screen. But that one shot of Wonder Woman with the magic lasso wrapped around Doomsday was badass as it gets in this entire film, I think.
No, I'm glad you brought that up, because, I mean, we can either enjoy the fight, accept it, or just go like, oh, this is stupid and all the CGI. But I, for the highlight for me emotionally was when she had the Doomsday creature wrapped in the lasso and she was holding on as much as she could and the lasso was glowing golden. I said, they nailed that.
That scene alone, as well as her getting knocked on her ass, smiling, getting right back up and charging ahead, that made me go, okay, you, not that you needed to sell me on the upcoming Wonder Woman movie, but that alone made me go, okay, I want to see, can we stop this film and just show that instead? Now I can forget most of what I had just been watching. I thought she was really terrific. Even little things that might have bothered me at first kind of went away. You know, I realized, because the actress, Gal Gadot, she's got a little bit of an accent, but then I realized it doesn't really bother me because, you know, first of all, she's not, you know, Diana's not from America anyway.
She should have a little bit of an accent. She just should. And that worked really well, I thought. Yeah.
But everything else, everything from her, Diana Prince interacting with Bruce Wayne to Wonder Woman on the battlefield, that was, absolutely the highlight of the movie. I don't think I have anything negative to say other than, and it's silly, like, really? You had to go through all that trouble just because he had a photograph? Which you could have just said, that's my grandmother, or that's photoshopped.
And also, unless the original like file has been erased off of his computer, he still has a picture of her. Yeah. I mean, you know, let's not even worry about that.
It doesn't make any sense. And speaking of things that don't make sense.
Uh-huh.
Because I feel, I don't think we're shortchanging Wonder Woman by not talking about her that much. It's only because we thought she was great, so we don't have a lot of negative things to say about her like the other two, especially Superman.
Right.
But speaking of negative, let's talk about Lex Luthor. I'll say this from the outset. It's not that I don't think Jesse Eisenberg did a good job acting here. You know, I didn't have a problem with Jesse Eisenberg as Jesse Eisenberg here. And I didn't have, and I don't have a problem with going in a different direction with Luthor than had been done before. Because, you know, Gene Hackman was certainly a huge different direction for Luthor back in 1978 from what had been in the comics at that point. And no one ever gives that movie credit for it. I always thought that had a huge impact on Luthor in the comics years later. Because that was the first depiction of Luthor as anything even remotely like a businessman, which is what he became in the mid-80s. He became like Donald Trump, only a genius instead of what Donald Trump is. That's the only political comment for the podcast. I apologize. But man, I went into the movie thinking that, at least, as far as Eisenberg. It's really tough, though, man. It's really...
It's hard, and I sometimes want to like what was going on. I mean, Eisenberg was fine, I guess, but
it's about characters and motivations.
Yeah.
Luthor's motivations seem to keep changing and never being totally clear at times. And I've seen excuses made for this. You know, when we get to the end of the movie where, maybe he was in the throes of this, you know, under some sort of control or something. It's like, I don't feel that's really clarified there. I think we're doing guesswork. I think we're reading things into this. I don't feel that's the case up until maybe the latter part of the film or the end of the film. But everything else, I mean, let's face it. One easy criticism to make is, why did Eisenberg play Luthor more like he was the Joker than he was a Luthor, quite frankly?
And also, like, the times when he would kind of drift off and, like, not know what he was talking about. And maybe there's a reason for it. Maybe, like you say, he's being controlled by Darkseid or something stupid that we have to guess about. But we all have this kind of sense about Lex Luthor, and he's, like, he's very put together. He's always very put together. And so it's okay to see a crazy Lex Luthor, I guess, but it's not very satisfying because he's not recognizable as Lex Luthor.
I feel there's so many problems with this character as far as the story of this movie. And we've already mentioned several of them when we were talking about the big three already. You know, like what you were saying before about how Luthor apparently knows the
everything, identities
of both Superman and Batman. So, hey, that's one way to get rid of Superman or deal with him. It's like, you know, expose him. I don't know why no one ever does that.
Right. You
know? But then his motive, again, the motivations don't make a lot of sense. And then we get these things that happen, which are like, wait, why is he making these? Why is he making these two fight again? Why does he want Batman killed because of the kryptonite theft?
His thought is that he'll get Batman to do the dirty work for him. He has maneuvered Batman into stealing the kryptonite to kill Superman, and if it doesn't kill Superman, then he'll unleash Doomsday on him. That seems like the coherent thread.
Okay.
He doesn't have anything against Batman per se, but he wants Batman to do the job so he won't have to. When, you know, it'd be a lot easier just to invite Superman to dinner and then shoot him with a kryptonite bullet. I mean, I don't know. I mean, you know, it just seems like it'd be a lot easier than what he's trying to do.
There's a lot of ridiculous machinations to Luthor's plans in this movie. The terrorist bombing. Here's my big problem with that. Then I'll move on to the next thing. Is, although she doesn't have any spoken lines, she might have a couple lines there.
She talks to Bruce Wayne, his assistant.
Right, right. Mercy. Who is, as we've seen in this movie, albeit briefly, and then those of us who know the character from other source material, that's kind of like, that's his right-hand man, you know, so to speak. That's his main person. That's his confidant. That's his assistant on all these things. Clearly, we see that in this movie.
Right, and then he blows her up.
What the hell was that?
Right,
that made zero sense to me. Why wouldn't you tell her? Why would you have her there? Why would you sacrifice? That made no sense.
I mean, it seemed dumb to have her in the movie at all and then just blow her up. Because during the movie, I was kind of intrigued by the secondary character because I love secondary characters.
Yeah.
I just do. And so I thought, well, you know what? I'm kind of into this this assistant of Lex Luthor, and maybe she'll play a bigger role in like the next movie or whatever. And then it seemed weird to me that, you know, Lex doesn't have to go to the stupid, you know, hearing on Superman. He doesn't have to send his assistant, you know, and it just ties into everything about the Lex Luthor plot. It's just kind of weirdly put together. Like everything with Holly Hunter, a fine actress.
What was the need? Well, by the time all this is done, you realize, wait, did we just waste how much of this movie on something which really ends up going nowhere?
So much so. Almost everything involved with Superman that does not involve Batman punching him. Well, it's just dumb. I mean, yeah. You know.
Let me get back to Luthor and more of what I perceive as dumbness. Okay. I like the idea that there's this Kryptonian ship still there and they have the big thing over because, you know, how could they move
it?
That makes perfect sense to me. That's fine. Okay. So Luthor essentially being able to get on board the Kryptonian ship. I'm troubled by how he would know that Kryptonian technology would still rely on fingerprints.
Right.
I'm troubled that Kryptonian technology would rely on fingerprints because that's the kind of a very earthly kind of a thing. I'm troubled by the fact that the Kryptonians have outlawed this way, this thing of essentially whatever the experiments that they do.
Right.
And yet the ship is fully equipped to do it.
Yeah.
But none of that made any sense to me. And I sat through it both times and I was just scratching my head going, but this doesn't make any sense.
It was just all super magical and it's just annoying. I'm not going to say that I hated the fact that they brought Doomsday into the movie, but Doomsday is something that should be done well and not just some kind of blobby troll from Lord of the Rings and not something that is just wiped out with a kryptonite spear. And it's something that a mature and experienced Superman needs to fight for like three straight movies or something before he gets killed. The fact that they threw Doomsday in so they could kill Superman to, you know, in the biggest, stupidest way possible, just irritated me so much. And because I thought, there's no way they're killing Superman, because it would be cheap. It would just be stupid cheap. We wouldn't accept it. Even people who don't know about the death of Superman comics would just not accept the fact that Superman is dead, because it's the comics, they always come back. Right. And for it to end on this big kind of climactic thing, like, oh, Superman's dead, and Clark Kent's dead too. Yes, we don't know where his body is, but he's dead too.
And it's on page 12. Anyways.
Right, don't even go there. I mean, just do something different, and I would have been okay with it. Like, if I'm not even going to pretend to rewrite the end of the movie, but just don't do what you did. Oh, you did that? That was wrong. And so that's my feeling on the end of the movie and Luther's big deal all around.
I mean, I'm actually not much of a fan of the whole Doomsday thing to begin with in the comics anyway. I know that was, for me, the Doomsday stuff in the comic books was also is reminiscent of when a period where I started getting a distaste for comics, which I kind of came and went. And then I got over it again, and then I was a collector again. But I found it to be more of a stunt than anything else. But I don't, again, let me get into this movie. It did seem to be a bit of a waste. I would agree. I don't want to have three movies of Doomsday either. But in a way, Doomsday, I'm going to go really nasty with this one. Doomsday in this movie was kind of like an overamped bad use of him, the way Bane was misused in Batman and Robin.
Oh, I agree.
But maybe it just didn't bother me as much as that did, because you know what? He's there for a cool fight.
Yeah.
I'm not going to get hung up on it being a waste of a character, only because I personally never liked the character very much, so it doesn't bother me personally. I know it would bother other people, much the way it would bother me if this had been, say, Bizarro instead of Doomsday, which it could have been. They could have done a cloning thing that would have been, they could have made it a Bizarro origin, and if they had done that and then killed him, that would have upset me. It's like, no, you should just do a movie about Bizarro, you know, because then maybe he'd be happy, since this Superman is all morose.
Oh, that would be awesome. Oh, no, if the Bizarro Superman was like our Superman, you know?
can we just go to that universe?
Oh, that'd be, and then our Superman kills that universe's Superman and takes his place. All right, I'll stop.
I agree. Now, back to Luther and the plans, and we'll get to that ending, which I think kind of opens the door for things that are either good or bad with this movie.
Yeah.
When we get to the ending, when Batman encounters him in prison. Oh, by the way, obviously Batman is okay with the authorities since they let him into the prison. Just saying. too bad you're dead, Superman. You would have picked up on this.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, we didn't even get into the Martha thing, but no.
it's okay. I mean, there's nothing that we're going to say that is shocking or controversial, so yeah.
But here, so they do this when Batman encounters Luther in prison, you know, after ooh, he's had his head shaved. This is going to be the year of characters being cool. Like, ooh, they got their head shaved, like, so just like in the comics. They're going to do that in the upcoming X-Men movie too, apparently.
Right.
There is an indication that, you know, what Luther says, like, oh, it's too late. He heard us. He's coming.
Yeah, the bell has been rung.
And some people thought that when Batman's walking away and Luther keeps saying ding ding, that he was actually saying ping ping.
Yeah, the mother box. Yeah,
that's not true, actually.
He said ding ding. I guarantee.
It was just ding ding. He's talking about you can't unring that bell.
Right.
Now, the problem with this is this. Because DC and, you know, or Warner Brothers, it's not really a DC Comics thing. It's a Warner Brothers thing. We should almost eliminate the comic book companies from the conversations, because this is about the giant movie studios and what their decisions are. You know, this isn't, sure. So it's more of a Warner Brothers versus Disney thing, I guess. So they're trying to lay the groundwork for Darkseid, who is probably one of the best villains, you know, of all time, a Jack Kirby creation from the late 60s, who, without Darkseid and the story of the New Gods and this whole thing that Jack Kirby created, the Fourth World with DC Comics, you I'm going to say you might not have Star Wars. Because I think a lot of what Lucas did with Star Wars, beyond the old sci-fi serials and some westerns and the Hidden Fortress, whatever, was clearly inspired by the New Gods and the story of Darkseid and his son Orion and so on and so forth.
I hadn't thought about that, but I think you might be onto something. We probably can't talk about it here on the podcast; so it'll run too long. But yeah. At some point, you and I need to talk about that.
I think that alone is an interesting thing to look at, just the Star Wars New Gods thing, because there's a lot of interesting parallels, and I think it's pretty much a given at this point. I mean, even the fact that everything in the Star Wars is about the dark side. But anyway, but getting back to this movie, so we have that scene earlier in the film, the vision,
And in my opinion, we can debate this or not, but of the non-Wonder Woman parts of the movie, I enjoyed this part the best. But go ahead, and I'll either defend it or agree with you with whatever you say.
Well,
go.
There's things I like about it.
Uh-huh.
I'm a little iffy on the lack of clarity of whether this is a dream or a vision, or whether it's somehow created by the Flash, who appears directly after it. Although it took me a second to realize, is that supposed to be the Flash, and why is he wearing this spacesuit?
I did not know that was the Flash, and it was killing me. And my wife is like, "Who was that?" And I was like, maybe it was someone from the New Gods that I can't remember, because I was the Parademon showing up, clinched it. But the desolate landscape with the big like flaming columns in the far distance. It was pretty clear that this was an apocalypse-sized Earth.
Right, and you had the big Omega symbol. Here's the problem I had with that vision. And it wasn't the fact that Batman was killing all these soldiers, because we don't even know if they could be aliens. They could be robots, because they're faceless. We don't know what they are.
And in very desperate circumstances of a future war. I mean, because this is like a dream. It's all good. Yeah. It doesn't have to be a future, but if someone told me, Batman would kill dudes if the Earth was invaded by aliens and it was this nightmarish realm, and I was like, okay, I would allow Batman to go to that length at that point. But go ahead.
I just feel that beyond the surreal nature of it and, whatever, I felt there should still be just a touch more clarity with what was happening there, because then it goes to the thing where if you've not read a comic book, then this makes no sense.
Right.
And that's a problem with this movie, that they're inserting all these things in here, especially this stuff, which doesn't make sense. And they don't do it as cleanly as, say, and I hate to say this, believe me, but like what they did with the Marvel movies. I mean, yeah, if I'm not a comic book reader, I don't know anything about who Thanos is or what the Infinity Gems are, but they've been laying the groundwork there.
They talked about it, yeah.
Yeah, they, at the very least, people know there is this major menace in outer space. We got to see him a little bit more in, Guardians of the Galaxy, actually. And we know they're eventually building up to that. But here, it's like, wait, what? I'm not really clear what you just did there. It seems like you're just inserting these things, like these little files of these different characters, which also, it's cool to see on one hand, so thank you, Luther, for having these files. But on the other hand, I'm like, why is Aquaman posing for whoever the underwater cameraman is there? At least the other two make sense, that, the Flash thing, it's a security camera. Or the Cyborg thing. Oh, by the way, even after watching it twice, I had no idea the Cyborg was being rebuilt or built by a motor box. I didn't realize it until I read about it later on. So even I didn't get that at the time.
Right.
But I don't know. Maybe I just wanted that to be done in a way where I would have had a more satisfying ooh. Whereas by the time the movie was over, I was like, it shouldn't be. I guess they're hinting at Darkseid.
I can't defend that segment from a story point of view, particularly because Batman should not be seeing the future in a dream, unless, as you say, it's an effect of the Flash doing some weird time thing. But I really enjoyed that segment just because if they ever made a New Gods movie, I feel they would be able to do it okay. And so when the Parademons showed up, I was like, you know, I'm into this. But I agree with you. I don't want to argue with you that it was correctly done or it was supposed to make sense to the average, you know, viewgoer who probably still think that Batman was just having, or Bruce Wayne was just having a nightmare. And I agree with that. But I can't defend it narratively. I can just tell you that it made me happy from a comic book geek type of way. And that in itself is a bad thing probably for the movie.
Right. And that's because that goes back to what I said, you know, when we started this 18 hours ago, that that it's an issue when, you know, some of the cool stuff, I don't mind if a movie does things which are, what do they call, Easter eggs. So it's a little thing where, you know, only the comic book fans will appreciate that. But it's okay because it's, you know, whether it be, you know, a sign or something on a shelf or even a throwaway comment. But not something which is like a major part of your movie, which is a building block to your later movies. That bothers me. That really bothers me. By the way, just before we start to wrap things up, because I realize, this might be a good time to bring it up. Since we mentioned the Vision and what Batman does in it, but we could say we don't know if that's reality or not. We don't know if it's the future or a dream, whatever. We don't know if what the soldiers he's fighting are even human because they all have, you know, their faces are covered. They could be aliens. They could be robots. Who knows? But in the later scene, when Batman is fighting all those thugs to save Martha Wayne, you know, when Luther decides to kidnap. I'm sorry, Martha Kent. Ooh, wow. Ooh, I almost made a mistake that Batman does. I'm afraid of your son. anyway. Now, there are some people, some critics, some internet personalities, whatever, who take issue with the fact that Batman seems to be killing willy-nilly there. What was your take on that? I wonder if you feel about it the way I do or not.
There's one point. Well, he definitely, like, you know, busts up on a lot of people. But at one point, he has a guy who has a machine gun, and Batman is spraying the room with that guy's machine gun. So we'll talk about the flamethrower thing in a moment. I did not believe that Batman was shooting anybody at that point because everyone was like ducking and taking cover, and I felt that he was just putting down, making this guy lay down, suppressing fire. But I bet somebody died in that whole scene. Somebody died. Now, how do I feel about Batman killing these guys? It's hard to say. It's hard to say. This is the kind of like the Frank Miller inspired Batman. And in The Dark Knight, he totally kills somebody. I couldn't. I'm not sure where, but I'm pretty sure people die in The Dark Knight. I prefer Batman not to kill people. When he does kill people, it was for like some kind of like crazy self-defense type thing. So it irritates me, I guess, for him to do it. But I just kind of rolled with it for this. I guess the movie had already imprinted upon me that this wasn't necessarily going to be my cup of tea, and I could accept it as some kind of Elseworld thing where everybody's killing everybody all the time. Does that answer your question? Did I make any sense at all?
Yeah, made perfect sense. I guess I'm sort of kind of in the same ballpark with you, kind of. I'm not absolutely clear that he absolutely killed a number of people there, but I can see why, you know, with the machine gun thing. Although turning their weapons against them, you know, is a little different. And the whole that one standoff with that one guy, I mean, that's an exact take homage to something from The Dark Knight Returns. Right down to the dialogue. And you know, when he stabs that guy, it's actually more on the shoulder, so he's not stabbing him to death, whatever. Here's the thing. This is what annoys me about people who are going nuts about, Batman kills, Batman using the gun, Batman. Yeah. It's like, okay, hey, guys and gals, have you not seen any other Batman movies?
Every Batman movie, yeah.
Go back and watch the first two Tim Burton Batman movies. The Batmobile and the Batplane are both equipped with machine guns, and they're not firing rubber bullets. Batman kills in both those movies. Clearly kills. There's no question that he kills people. When he throws people off of the top of a church, and I'm not talking about the Joker, who, yeah. you know, one could say, well, he sort of kind of, well, it's more manslaughter. I don't know.
But whatever, yeah.
The other guy, he throws that thing. That's a death. And Batman Returns, the one with the joke, excuse me, the one with the Penguin and Catwoman, when he does things like, you know, attach a bomb to a guy and smiles about it, he just killed that guy. You know, and there's no way you're ever going to convince me that he doesn't kill any number of people in the three Nolan movies. I mean, he certainly lets Ra's al Ghul die at the end of Batman Begins because they make a big deal about that. Not to mention all the like the anarchy of the car crashes and everything with the Dark Knight. It's like, yeah, I'm pretty sure some of those people die. But you know, but anyway, it just bothered me because we've seen that before. And enough, come on. So there's this one person who, I mean, I think she's great otherwise on the interwebs and whatever, but now she keeps referring to this Batman as serial killer Batman. I'm like, oh, give it a rest. I mean, just, I don't need to defend it, but come on, it's enough.
Well, it's funny because people like to attach different things to Batman. My niece Meg does not like Batman because he's so whiny. He's always going on about his dead parents. I'm like, what are you talking about? And she has this idea in her mind that Batman is like beating up on bad guys and then like crying and going like, oh, I'm beating up on you because my parents died. I'm like, Meg, that's funny, but don't pretend that's legit. I mean, you know, it's not. I mean, that's like Toy Fair Batman. It's not R. It's not when I say R, but it's not like. The real, please. But you know what I mean.
I know exactly what you mean.
The legit Batman, right.
I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, this is a movie where I feel, I think there are scenes I definitely like. I think we both definitely like. There's certain scenes in the movie we like, you know. There are certain character depictions that we like, and there are certain character depictions we have, at the very least, trouble with, some majorly. Like the Luther thing, I think, I forget which writer pointed this out, but the problem with that Luther, it's really silly, but you know, watching the ads for the upcoming Suicide Squad movie, right? Which I'm really excited to see. I think it looks really good, fabulous so far. Now Luther and Joker have encountered each other any number of times, you know, because they're which makes perfect sense because you know the biggest Batman villain, the biggest Superman villain. Sure. Based on seeing Eisenberg as Luther in this movie, and even the little bit I've seen of Jared Leto as the Joker in the upcoming Suicide Squad movie, I'm having a hard time imagining those two characters inhabiting the same space.
Right. It just because Lex is so Joker-like in this movie, you feel like there's not enough to differentiate the two of them.
Yeah.
You know, and there's a certain kind of yin yang that goes on between Joker and Lex Luthor that works, just like there's a kind of a yin-yang that goes on between the Joker and Two-Face that also works in the comics. And you don't want a Joker-like villain hanging out with the Joker because that is too – I mean, except for Harley Quinn. We'll accept that.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, Lex Luthor needs to be a particular type to play off and along with the Joker.
Well, what I always thought was – I always thought the way Superman and Batman are to each other in a weird way is kind of the way Joker and Luthor are to each other. Whereas they're such very different personalities, and that when it comes to Superman and Batman, it's what kind of ends up bringing them together, despite whatever attempts over the last 20 years to make it like they don't like each other or something. But it's also the fundamental issue between Joker and Luthor, because he should kind of drive Luthor crazy, because you know Luthor is very pragmatic. He's very Luthor should be like a grim or just nastily sarcastic guy, whereas the Joker is just lunacy. It's insanity. Right. Luthor is all about you know carefully constructed plans, you know, with a point to them. The Joker isn't. That's you know the whole thing about you know Luthor's about control and the Joker is about anarchy.
But the Joker, not only though is he about anarchy, but it's kind of like his anarchical plans tend to work out in a certain way for an outcome that he wants. Even though he tells Harvey Dent in the Nolan movie, it's like, look, I just do crazy things, but you know, there's a meth plan for what's going on. So I can see Luthor working that angle, kind of like identifying. Joker's particular brand of craziness will get me this particular result.
Yes, you're absolutely right about that.
All right.
All right. So since we did, I think by splitting it into the four characters, we ended up covering a lot more. We probably ended up covering a lot more of the movie than I thought we would, which is good because we've spoken for quite some time. Is there anything else about the film that you feel is worthy of mention, either good or bad? I mean, considering the movie goes on forever anyway, in some regards, there may be something that I feel like there's going to be things after we finish recording, I'm like, oh, I can't believe I didn't mention that, or I didn't mention that. You know?
We'll get that. I'm trying to think of more positive things. I mean, I thought the movie looked good. I don't think Doomsday looked good, but I think overall, go ahead.
I think once Doomsday had his little transformation and he got like all the little stone bone things popping out of him, when then he looked a little bit more like
better.
The comic book version. But before that, I forget, a friend of mine pointed this out to me. I made the joke about the orc thing. Actually, what he really looks like, he looks like if you ever watched like the test animation for when they did the original King Kong movie.
Oh, really?
And the fact that they even have him like on top of a building, kind of almost, you know, is almost a King Kong call out. But if you ever watch like the original, before they kind of put more hair on him in the King Kong movie, and I'm talking about like the 1930s one, he kind of looks like that. He's kind of like clay character, and that's what he kind of looks. So you know, in that sense, I liked it. Whatever. I wasn't a big Doomsday fan to begin with, but I'll forgive Doomsday because it gave us a great Wonder Woman scene.
Yes. I'll grant you that. Right.
Because if that was the way to get her in the movie, even though I can't understand how she was leaving the hotel and then the time that took her to get to the airplane, and I was like, but that doesn't make any sense. There's so many logic problems in this movie that make no sense. Why not have her keep him on the uninhabited island and you go get the spear? Why would you lead him back to where there might be people? You know what? It's a rabbit hole of there are any number of articles, or whatever you call them, or those BuzzFeed-like things that have, like, you know, 28 plot holes in Batman v Superman, 33 problems. Like, you know what? Some of them are nitpicky, but a lot of them I'm like, that's a problem. Yeah, that doesn't make a lot of sense, you know. Who's that woman he's sleeping with? Oh, okay, he just picked up some random one. I don't care.
Look, Bruce Wayne can sleep with whoever he wants. That's fine. I got no problem with that.
I like that, actually. It's like, I like that he's getting some. Here's one. Lois Lane lives in Metropolis, right? Because she works at the Daily Planet. Yep. Metropolis is like the city on the hill, the shining city. It's not Gotham.
Right.
And she's an established reporter. I'm assuming she's making a decent dollar, too. I mean, I understand you don't want to put her in a ridiculous, over-the-top apartment like the 1970 Superman movie, which was like, is Lois Lane a multimillionaire with this gigantic terrace apartment? But the apartment she's in this movie, and apparently sharing with Clark Kent, looks like a slum.
It does. No, I agree. I kind of thought, man, it seemed like a very unsafe place to me. But
it made no sense. It looked like they were in a tenement in Gotham or something. Did they do it because they thought it had texture? It made no sense.
I don't know, but because they chose to have Metropolis on one side of the bay and Gotham on the other side of the bay, I mean, for all we know, Lois lived in Gotham. I don't know, but
And I don't mind them putting the two cities near each other because there have been different versions of that throughout the history of. You know, I remember we talked about this on my podcast where they would be separated by a mountain range. There used to be a mountain range separating Metropolis and Gotham. But instead, they want to do the water because what works better? That way you could see there's a signal.
Yeah.
Which is kind of funny, but we don't know who lit it. In this case, he lit it, I guess. So I guess it's fine.
Right.
Oh, my God. Yeah. It's funny. I don't hate the movie, although I know it sounds like I just dumped on it a whole lot.
There was some fun to it, and I'd see it again, but I probably won't see it in the theater again. I guess in a weird way, I want to support the movie because I want there to be more DC movies. I'm not a huge Zack Snyder fan, but I don't hate him the way some people hate him. And again, if he wants to make a New Gods movie and it looks exactly like the 300, but with ray guns, I'm totally down with that.
That would be interesting.
Yeah.
I just feel he's had his time. We can let other people work with these films and with it. So I will confess, I am concerned that he's directing the Justice League movie or both Justice League movies, because it's going to be like a part one and a part two. I wish they could hand it off to someone else. More importantly, can someone please, and stop with the petitions about Zack Snyder. I'll live with Snyder. Please write petitions to get David Goyer off these scripts. I don't know what happened to this guy, because he's written some decent comic book stuff, but more and as time has progressed, he more and more doesn't seem to get characters. He doesn't get Superman. And then you read him in interviews. He doesn't get characters. He mocked the Martian Manhunter, the idea of that character, and mocked people who would be fans. It's like, what? What is wrong with you, dude?
Yeah, I mean, because either read or watch The New Frontier, and the Martian Manhunter was such a standout character in those stories.
If you're hung up on the name, just have him called John Jones, because that's what people call him anyway.
Right. I mean, because I think you and I will agree that in this movie, I don't think the visuals were bad, nor do I think the direction was bad, but I don't think the script was good. And, Goyer had to have a part of that, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, he co-wrote it.
Yeah.
I blame him more than I blame the other guy, because Chris Terrio has proven he wrote Argo. He can write a really tight, complicated script. I think this has Goyer's fingerprints all over it. And the only thing I can think of with this is, you know, maybe if they could have made this two movies, and they could have, that way they could have parceled out their ideas for one and the other, and then had a more build up. And then maybe you have, yes, you could have the first one maybe focus more on Batman as we build up to these two confronting each other, and that could be your second movie or something like that. Just so you could have more care taken with the character development and not a million plots and have them make some sense. Although we might end up with two bad movies. I don't know. But you know, but Warner Brothers, you did that with the Harry Potter thing. You split the last one into two parts. You know, I thought that might have been one way to rescue this. Because for a movie that's as long as it is, it still feels like a lot of it doesn't go anywhere, and it's kind of like or pointless. And you know, there's good stuff in here, and I'm still looking forward. I'm looking forward to the Wonder Woman movie. I'm looking forward to the Suicide Squad, and apparently Affleck is going to be in there as Batman. So I'm looking forward to seeing him not under Snyder's direction. But, you know, this, and it's really funny that right now we're hearing all the advance word for the Marvel Civil War movie, and all I'm hearing is that it's fantastic, and they got it right, and that's great. And I'm not, forget the whole DC versus Marvel thing, but it is kind of frustrating that we couldn't have done that just with these two major characters. It's annoying for anyone who's been a fan for, you know, for several decades like us.
As a fellow DC fanboy, I feel your pain because I prefer DC over Marvel, and I can enjoy the Marvel success, but I want DC to have success, and luckily they have success in the TV realm.
Yeah,
thank God for Flash and Supergirl.
Which they still need to announce they're renewing. I wish they would do that already. It's really bugging me that they have not renewed Supergirl as of yet. So I don't know why they're holding out on us. And if they don't, let the CW pick it up, please, because I need that story to continue, because it really got good in the second half of that season.
Yeah.
All right. I think it feels like we have covered it from back to front and over again. And you know, even if there are a million things that we've forgotten, you know, we'll throw our comments about them on Facebook or something like that. But before I do my usual little wrap up thing here, Pat, would you like to at least promote your very beloved blog?
Sure, thank you. I appreciate the kind words. All right, if anybody has any interest in Game of Thrones, I have a blog that is not specifically Game of Thrones related, but I have over 120 essays that are not recaps. They're just me taking on a topic and talking about it. You can read all of those over at my blog, patrickspanagle.com. And I assume, Scott, you'll just include a link in the show notes so they don't need me to spell my name.
Yes. I think I better do that.
Thank you. I appreciate that. But I only blog about Game of Thrones when the show is not on the air, because I need the therapy to, you know, to handle getting to the hiatus. And of course, my last post was last Wednesday, and now I'm going to watch the show for 10 weeks and have a nice break, and then I'll start blogging again about the show.
Yeah.
And I love talking to people about it, and sometimes I've got good ideas, sometimes I've got dumb ideas, and I should be challenged when I have a dumb idea. So there you go.
Excellent. I'm looking forward to there being a season of Game of Thrones that the book readers don't have one up on us for a change.
Right on, yeah. Yeah.
We're all in the same camp now.
Yes, yes.
All right. So to wrap things up, if you enjoyed this podcast, you can join us on Facebook. We're the Serious TV Drama Podcast. Type that in, like the page, join the conversation. Mostly about TV, although obviously this podcast was about movies or one specific movie. You can also find us on iTunes the very same way. Type in the Serious TV Drama Podcast. You can subscribe to our feed as well as rate and review us there. Every rating and review helps us get noticed by folks searching for podcasts about things like, I don't know, Better Call Saul or The Flash. Who knows? Maybe even Game of Thrones if we ever decide to talk about it again. We used to every once in a while. Maybe we will this season. And finally, you can also follow us on the Twitter. Our handle there is at STVD Podcast. It's STVD as in Serious TV Drama Podcast. I send out links to the show as well as comment on various things or harass or celebrities. Finally, before I say goodbye, I wanted to mention something here. So guys out there, if you liked the opening theme to this podcast, it was a little mashup I discovered of the Superman and Batman themes by John Williams and Danny Elfman. I think you can track down that as well as other similar things on georgeshawmusic.com. I just want to give that fellow a shout out so he doesn't track us down and sue me for using it for the opening theme, although he still might. But now we're at the end, and I don't know when we're going to be putting this podcast out because I got to wait for Dan to be available to do the editing for the beginning and ending of this podcast because I'm too stupid to do it myself. So it could be several days. We did record this on April 24th, by the way, in case you didn't realize that already. But it was just a few days ago that the artist, musical artist Prince passed away. And I don't want to get into a long eulogy here the way I might have done a few months ago about David Bowie, but needless to say, Prince was an immense talent that meant a lot to many people, and it was both a shocking and saddening loss. So it felt only appropriate to end this podcast with what I hope will work. I just tracked it down on YouTube, and hopefully Dan will be able to make an MP3 of it. I'm not going to say what it is. I think it's kind of obvious what I would have chosen, especially for this podcast, what the ending music will be. And hopefully folks will enjoy that. So after having said that, I want to again thank Pat for joining me for our extended conversation about Batman v Superman. I hope you enjoyed being here.
I did. Thank you, Scott. I appreciated being on the podcast.
Absolutely. And goodbye to everybody out there. And until next time.
Live one here. Bustin'.
like Batman.
Hi, Bruce Wayne. I tried to avoid all this, but I can't.
I just gotta know, are we gonna try to love each other?
She is great, isn't she?
Ooh yeah. I wanna bust that body. Ooh yeah. I wanna bust that body.
I'd like to.
Ooh yeah.
She's out there right now.
I wanna bust that body. Ooh yeah.
Well, Miss Bale. Ooh. You ever dance with the devil in the pale of night? I always ask that of all my prey. I just like the sound of it. I'm gonna go to work.
Hey, Ducky, let me stick the 7-inch in the computer.
Ever heard of the evil?